Hey, welcome to Friday's program. Boy, what a fast week, huh? Can't believe it's Friday again. Oh, and when we sign off tonight, we finally got the exit music on Friday's fixed. You know, going straight to hell. Just thought I'd let you know, in case that was bugging you the way it was bugging me. Seven past the hour. How about that Facebook stuff? Does that make you want to gag and throw up all over the place? I've never seen a cluster thing like that in my life. Good God. As a matter of fact, I got an email from Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. Apparently, see, I don't own stock. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do. I have some Sirius. Or no, I have some XM. Same thing now. Yeah, I bought it at $13 and then it went down to about 20 cents. It's back up, you know. That's all we have. Oh, Kathy has some stuff, but, you know, she had that before she married me. But I decided to check out Facebook, so I got my name on the list. And I got an email from Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. This is what it said. Dear potential investor, for years you've wasted your time on Facebook. Now here's your chance to waste your money on it too. Tomorrow is Facebook's IPO, and I know what some of you are thinking. How will Facebook be any different from the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s? Well, for one thing, those bad dot-com stocks were all speculation and hype and weren't based on real business. Facebook, on the other hand, is based on a solid foundation of Angry Birds and imaginary sheep. Second, Facebook is the most successful social network in the world, enabling millions to share information of no interest with people they barely know. Third, every time someone clicks on a Facebook ad, Facebook makes money. And while no one has ever done this on purpose, millions have done it by mistake while drunk. We totally stole this idea from iTunes. Finally, if you invest in Facebook, you'll be far from alone. As a result of using Facebook for the past few years, over 900 million people in the world has suffered mild to moderate brain damage, impairing their ability to make reasoned judgments. These will be your fellow Facebook investors. With your help, if all goes as planned tomorrow, Facebook's IPO will net $100 billion. To put that number in context, it would take J.P. Morgan four or five trades to lose that much money. One last thing. What will I, Mark Zuckerberg, do with the $18 billion I'm expected to earn from Facebook's IPO? Well, I'm considering buying Greece, but that would still leave me with $18 billion. LOL, friend me, Mark. Andy Borowitz forwarded that to me. The Borowitz Report. If you're not on Andy Borowitz's mailing list, you should get on there. I mean, what a bunch of crapola. I'm serious. Talk about reeling in the fish. Oh, my God. Facebook. Ooh, I want to buy me some of that. What are you buying? Yeah, well, no, seriously, what are you buying? If you put your $100 into Facebook, what are you buying? Well, I'm buying part of Facebook. I know. What are you buying? It's a good deal. Why is it a good deal? Well, there's 900 million people on it. Yeah. How much did they pay to be on it? Do you know that Facebook is set up to follow you every time you even take a dump? Do you know Facebook will follow you around for the rest of your lives, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren? Do you realize that you, once you are even on Facebook, you become part of a vast herd of sheep? With teats that corporate America continues to milk? Are you crazy? Well, no, I just wanted to buy some Facebook. Yeah, why? Oh, Jesus, you and your questions. Facebook. Well, have fun, folks. I'm sure everybody will make a lot of money. I have never seen anything like it, you know, selling air back and forth. Not even air, selling cyberspace, which doesn't exist either. You know, the whole thing sits on what? 10 or 7 or 2,000 supercomputers. It was, I don't know where, in Singapore? On an island somewhere? You know, this is madness. This is madness. All right, coming up at 9:35, it is now 9:12 in the east in about 20 minutes. We are going to play for you the latest episode of The Return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe. And I'm telling you, you got to listen this time. You got to listen to this one. Not that you haven't listened to all of them, but this one is a good one. Because it kind of sets the stage for upcoming episodes of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. You'll like it. This hour, by the way, is being sponsored by Jeff Love. And his message: I'd like to wish my beautiful wife, Melody, the happiest of birthdays today. She flew into my life 14 years ago and instantly changed it for the better. And for that, I want to thank her from the bottom of my heart. Happy birthday to my sweet Melody of Love. She really completes my tune. Whoa. That's probably the gooeyest, sweetest dedication we've ever had, or sponsorship. There you go, Melody. Happy birthday. Thanks, Jeff. Happy birthday to my sweet Melody of Love. Oh. Yeah, happy birthday, Melody. And thank you, Jeff. We don't have time to do Prairie 2 right this second, but we'll get to it. This weekend in Chicago ought to be a real event. I think Rahm Emanuel is just waiting to unleash the forces of darkness that'll be on the street. The real forces of darkness will be in the NATO meeting. Jesus Christ, what a collection of warmongers, huh? What a collection of people who just want to go kill something, anything. Show it to me so I can bomb it. Show it to me so I can send a missile into its guts. Wow. Wow. I mean, when you start thinking about NATO, how many times has NATO been reformed? NATO was supposed to sit over there in Western Europe waiting for the Anschluss of the Soviet army. Remember? They were going to come rolling through the, what is it, the Volga Gap or something? Volga? You know, come swarming, just hordes of Soviet tanks and troops just gushing out of the Soviet Union. And NATO was supposed to be there to meet the onslaught and save civilization as we know it. And, of course, the Soviet Union kind of doesn't exist anymore, you know. It really doesn't. So NATO is meeting in Chicago, I guess, to figure out who they're going to target next. I think it's time they took another look at south of the border. A certain amount of killing is being done in Colombia, Honduras. They're still killing them in Nicaragua, El Salvador, and not so many that'll gather any kind of attention. But, you know, Norte Americanos are not killing anybody that we know of in South America. So, come on, boys, in NATO, when you get together, focus on South America.
crashing, leaving marks.
Go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay.
Past the hour. This afternoon in Chicago, reports are that several thousand people gathered in Chicago's Daley Plaza. Remember, we used to go there, Kath. That's where we attended a couple of demos. Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine was there. And according to Allison Kilkenny, writing at Truthout, everybody was there to demand the U.S. government start properly funding health and stop funding death. God, what an idea. Start properly funding health and stop funding death with an ever-expanding military budget. They were there along with National Nurses United. A member of that organization we had on this program earlier this week, Casey Hobbs, registered nurse for 37 years and part of Nurse Talk Radio, traveled to the Windy City from San Francisco in order to protest for the creation of what you heard. Who was it on our program? What was her name?
Ross
was her last name. I think Ross was her last name. Well, we'll call her Nurse Ross until I figure out who in the hell it was. I forget. But remember, she talked about this, the Robin Hood tax on Wall Street. It's less than half a penny tax on financial transactions, but as national nurses point out, with the billions of dollars that would be derived from that, we could heal America. And as Casey Hobbs said, we're going to do that by providing Medicare for all. We're going to provide college educations. We're going to rebuild our infrastructure and put people back to work and give back to the 99%. And that's all it would take, a minor transaction tax on these capitalist pigs who do nothing but shuffle and move around little minuscule amounts of money that, when multiplied to the trillionth, not trillion power, but magnified a trillion times or multiplied a trillion times, makes every one of these sons of bitches rich. Did you hear about the apartment in New York that sold for $90 million? An apartment in New York? It worked out to about $16,000 a square foot or something like $90 million for an apartment. Oh, my God. And as we talked about in this program, nurses are one group on the front lines of budget cuts. Austerity for them isn't an abstract concept to discuss on Meet the Press. But as Allison Kilkenny writes, it's something that is an all too vivid reality that nurses got to confront on a daily basis. Casey Hobbs said, quote, first of all, they cut mental health. Mental health is critical because in a time where finances are through the roof and people are losing their homes, mental health problems, depression, anxiety, suicide are off the charts. The response to that has been to cut mental health budgeting. So these right-wing sons of bitches and these capitalists continue to stuff their pockets with more money. I would just point out to the millionaires and billionaires who are refusing to go along with even a minimal amount of proper taxation, remember what happened to the French. Remember the terror. Remember the guillotine. Remember the butchery that went on for, what, 2 years, 3 years, the bloodletting, until finally, I mean, there is historical precedent for this. It's got to stop. One way or the other. In addition to raising money to fund decaying aspects of society, Casey Hobbs pointed out, she mentioned that the NATO protests were also about attempting to shift the government's priorities away from funding endless wars toward investing in its citizens. Think about this for a second. 10 years and counting in this Afghanistan war. The butchery in Iraq actually started in 1991. When did it stop? Has it stopped yet? How much longer are we going to put up with this? I'm just saying. Sponsored by Jeff Love. His message, I'd like to wish my beautiful wife, Melody, the happiest of birthdays today. She flew into my life 14 years ago and instantly changed it for the better. And for that, I want to thank her from the bottom of my heart. Happy birthday to my sweet Melody of Love. She really completes my tune. Well, happy birthday, Melody, and thank you, Jeff. As promised, the next installment of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Beyond the barriers of space and time, through a million would-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. Yes, radio listeners, it's time once again to join truth seekers from around the globe who anxiously await the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
You remember last time? Undead Nazi zombie Wernher von Braun trapped Mike and Kathy in a time machine controlled by an onboard HAL 9000 computer and sent them careening through time. HAL alerted Mike and Kathy that a mission-critical component of the Tesla Time-O-Matic was going to fail with disastrous consequences. Join us now for tonight's thrilling episode, Chapter 5, The Invisible Terror.
Just a moment. Just a moment.
Now what?
I've just picked up a fault in the AE-35 unit.
What's that?
It's going to go 100% failure.
So we're all going to die, right?
Well, yes.
And...
Is this like we're all going to die big picture sort of stuff, or is this thingy...
AE-35 unit.
Right. AE-35 unit's failure going to kill us?
Yes.
It's like trying to get a straight answer from a used car salesman.
So how much time do we have left?
It's going to go 100% failure within 72 hours.
So we've got 3 days before this doohickey...
AE-35 unit.
Who cares? We've got 3 days before it fails, right?
That's a completely reliable figure.
Okay, then. Hal!
Yes?
Is it possible for you to stop this thing?
Yes.
Well, then, stop it!
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this before.
Who cares? Put on the brakes, pull the plug, throw out an anchor, but do whatever it is you have to do to stop this thing.
I know I've never completely freed myself of the suspicion that there are some extremely odd things about this mission.
And you're right at the top of the list.
Shut this thing down right now.
Mike, now what are we going to do?
Good question. Von Braun locked the hatch from the outside. Hal?
Yes?
Can you unlock the hatch?
Yes.
Wait. Hal, is it safe for us to go outside?
Quite honestly, I wouldn't worry myself about that.
Yeah, well, you're not going outside. Do you have any idea where we are?
Or when we are?
I'm sorry if I don't have enough information.
Big help.
Mike, where's the dog? Where's Asta?
He's around in here somewhere. Von Braun must still have him. Don't worry, we'll get him back. But we've got bigger worries right now, like what's on the other side of that door. Okay, as God is my witness, I never thought I'd say what I'm about to say. Open the pod bay door, Hal. You know, the older you get, the weirder things are. Let's go see what's outside, Dollface.
Ready when you are, CB. Well, wherever we are, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Kathy, take a look over there at what we've been riding in.
Weird. Looks like an old VW van.
Yeah, without wheels. Okay, we're in the middle of the valley, surrounded by some fairly high hills. The sun is almost directly overhead, so it's probably around noon. I have no idea which way is north. And even if I did, well, what difference would it make? We don't know where we are, and we don't have any food or water. Did I leave anything out?
Well, we might know what time it is, but what about what year it is?
You're right. We're completely screwed.
Mike, did you?
Yeah. Asta! Asta! Come here, boy! Asta!
Do you think it's really...
There's only one way to find out. Asta!
There he is!
And he's not alone.
You're here, you're here!
Asta, where did you find him?
What are you talking about?
The dog, little girl. Listen to me very carefully. Where did you find the dog?
Seriously? I didn't find him anywhere. You gave him to me this morning?
We gave him to you?
Is this some kind of game?
Yes. We just want to see if you can tell us exactly what happened this morning.
You know, of course, that sounds completely lame.
Do you have a better idea?
Oh, now I remember what you said.
What?
You said when I came out to see you this afternoon that you would pretend to act stupid.
And
I should play along. Boy, this sure is a dumb game. I was playing hopscotch after breakfast, and you both came out of your house with Asta. You told me you had to run some errands, and could I look after him?
Did we say what kind of errands?
Nope. You just said I should meet you here after I had my lunch.
And then what?
And then I'm supposed to take you to Mr. Moody's gas station. Come on, let's go.
But first, you have to tell us your name.
You know, my name's Molly.
Well, Molly, didn't your mommy and daddy tell you you shouldn't talk to strangers?
You're silly. You're not strangers. You moved into the house next door right after school started. Come on, we have to go. You told me this morning you had to be at Mr. Moody's before 3 o'clock.
One last question, sweetie. What year is it?
You told me you'd ask me that. It's 1959, of course.
Travelers to unknown regions would be well advised to take along the family dog. He could just save you from entering the wrong gate. At least it happened that way once, in a mountainous area of the Twilight Zone.
Mike and Kathy might have found their dog, but they have more questions than Molly can answer in 6 minutes. Will they ever find their way back to their own time? Here's a scene from our next exciting episode.
God is my witness. I'll never be hungry again.
For more heart-pounding excitement, be sure to tune in next time for the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
I love it. I love it. Oh, my God. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. We will play that again, third hour of the program tonight for all the folks who missed it the first go around, and especially people who couldn't stand it. There must be one or two of you. This will give you a chance to really appreciate it next time. That was good, Kathy and Molly. You did great. You did great. You did great. Okay. Asta was pretty good, too. Thanks to Bob Alexander, who writes and produces this stuff. I don't know. I don't know how he does it. He's a former, I don't know how many of you know this, but he's a former Hollywood type. He lived in Hollywood for a number of years and did some producing, some writing, did all kinds of stuff until he found himself going slowly insane. And then he left. Good work, Bob Alexander. All right. Okay, let's get back to the really ugly, nasty stuff that's going on. Enough fun. Enough good times. Chicago. This weekend. Especially Sunday. Now, I've seen reports all over the place that Rahm Emanuel has called in the military. Now, of course, military is not supposed to do law enforcement work. Oh, never mind. What a stupid thing that was to say. Posse comitatus? Oh, please. Please. Anybody know what that means? That's good Latin, isn't it? Posse comitatus. But anyway, I don't know if these reports are true or not. Coast Guard in Lake Michigan. And, of course, Chicago sits right on the lake. I kind of miss Chicago tonight, Kathy. I mean, I got burned out, so to speak, on those three winters. There are two seasons in Chicago, winter and August, and that's about it. But I understand that there are flyovers. I don't know. Is it NATO planes? Are these aircraft from Denmark, France? We'll be right back.
I've seen the nations rise and fall. I've heard their stories, heard them all. Love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over, it ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
Before the hour, one area that I found myself in agreement with Ron Paul is closing military bases all over the world. Ours, we have bases in, 50, 60, 70, 80 countries? Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we sending helicopter gunships into Honduras? Jesus Christ. I mean, we turned Honduras into an American military base during the attempt to destroy and murder democracy in Nicaragua back in the Bad Old Reagan years. Don't you remember that? The Iran-Contra affair? You know, with the crazed psychopath Ali North and Admiral Poindexter. And I'm not going to go down that crew of ghouls. But what are we doing? This is insane. Barack Obama, you're responsible. You're the commander in chief. You really are. I mean, the good chance they have you so intimidated, you can't fart sideways for fear that somebody's going to come in and punch you out and tell you that you're not following the script. Really? Is that what it's like being president of the United States? Black or white, Jew or Gentile, is that what it's like? So NATO, what the hell is NATO meeting in Chicago? I thought they were supposed to meet in Brussels. Oh, that's right. Belgium doesn't have a government, or it's not even a country anymore, is it? What is Belgium now? That's the truth. Belgium is not Belgium, unless I'm thinking of something else. I don't know. Anyway, the Republican scum in the House of Representatives today passed a almost $650 billion military spending bill, including another $88 billion for murder and destruction in Afghanistan. And the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, also exceeds the cap set for defense programs in last year's budget deal. Remember that? Remember the budget? Oh, Jesus, God. National Nurses United has been working closely with Occupy Chicago, Allison Kilkenny reports, and the wider Occupy movement to organize the protests there. Occupy Chicago has several events planned for the weekend. Timothy Tross, activists who have participated in Occupy Chicago events, said we have a couple of unofficial marches planned, adding that Sunday is going to be a big day of protests, including a Say No to the War and Poverty agenda scheduled to take place at Patrillo Band Show, which includes a march afterward to McCormick Place. That's where the NATO warmongers are meeting. The event includes participants such as Jesse Jackson, Service Employees International Union, Healthcare, Illinois and Indiana, the United National United National Anti-War Coalition, Chicago Teachers Union, National Nurses United, United Electrical Workers, Western Region, Malik Mujahid and the Muslim Peace Coalition, and Veterans for Peace, among many others. And Afghanistan and Iraq combat veterans also plan to converge on Chicago Sunday in Grant Park to march to the NATO summit at McCormick Place, where they will ceremoniously return their medals to NATO's generals. A statement released by Iraq Veterans Against the War says the following, quote, "We were awarded these medals for serving in the global war on terror, a war based on lies and failed policies," end quote. Calling this March for Justice and Reconciliation, the veterans say they will mobilize, quote, "to demand that NATO immediately end the occupation of Afghanistan and related economic and social injustice, bring U.S. war dollars home to fund our communities, and acknowledge the rights and humanity of all who are affected by these wars," end quote. To the creep bastards, right-wingers, and the naysayers who claim that Occupy is dying, Timothy Tross says, look around. We're not dead. We have people from all around the country and the world coming here. And Ben Clifford, another activist with Occupy, said, quote, "We have hundreds of people camping out in Chicago. Well, one of the most horrific scenes in this country of domestic violence I ever saw. It even exceeded the horror of the March on Selma at the Pettus Bridge. Was what happened in Chicago in 1968 during the Democratic National Convention. I was living in Tampa at the time and was out doing something. And I came home and turned on television. This is back in the day. I had three networks. Turned on television. I think I saw CBS. And it was astonishing what I saw. This is back in the day when the networks would actually cover events like this. And what I saw was unbelievable. The blue-helmeted Chicago police just beating blood and bone out of people. An absolute police riot. Crazed cops and state police and National Guardsmen. I hope that doesn't happen this weekend in Chicago. I hope what's old isn't new again. This hour is sponsored by Ronald Canning. His message, in honor of the brave Americans who would take to the streets of Chicago this weekend, in fond memory of Ben White, and to support Captain Paul Watson, I sponsor this hour of your program. Please ask your listeners to go to the Sea Shepherd website to find out how they can help bring Paul from the German prison. It's cshepherd.org. The powers that be have the possibility to see Paul legally extradited to Costa Rica. If extradited, tried, and convicted in Costa Rica, Paul faces a death sentence. Let me just put one correction in there, Ronald. There is no death sentence in Costa Rica. He might face life imprisonment, which in a way is a death sentence, but Costa Rica doesn't have death penalty. Ronald goes on, we think, of course, that will never happen, but we live in a dangerous and weird time where unbelievable things can and do happen. Don't give the bastards a chance. Please ask your listeners to go to the Sea Shepherd website, get the addresses of the German ministers, write to them, the free Paul Watson. Let them know the whole world is watching. Good ideas. Thanks, Ronald. I appreciate the sponsorship. From Prairie 2, Subject line, we could be just like Greece. Initial jobless claims were unchanged for the week, suggesting that jobs continued to be produced, albeit at a slow pace. We have recovered more jobs than were lost in the private sector from the Bush crash. Even in so-called slow months, Obama can take credit for half again what was Bush's average month before the crash. If you include the jobs Bush lost at the end, including the early months of Obama's term, Bush's average month was zero new jobs created. That's true. That was during his entire 8 years. The problem is that red states have laid off 700,000 teachers, social workers, cops, firefighters, and bridge inspectors. This probably killed another 2 million more private sector jobs that would have produced supplies used by these government workers or would have benefited from the workers' spending. Trickle down from the top doesn't work, but you can drain the economy from the bottom. Amid much bluff and bluster, House Speaker Boehner announced his plan to sink the economy by refusing to authorize any new government borrowing in September without $1 trillion in new cuts and with no new taxes, of course. If this were actually done, it would kill a minimum of 1.8 million jobs just in time for the election. Fortunately, it's just noise because the Treasury Department, having seen this nonsense before, has laid plans to keep the government operating until the new Congress is sworn in 2013. And even if Boehner hangs onto his seat, he will likely be watching Speaker Pelosi swing the gavel. Obama's Commerce Department has announced a 31% tariff on Chinese solar panels based on a product dumping complaint. Obama put two major tariffs in place on tires and steel pipes 3 years ago. The American tire industry has built new plants and hired more workers as a result. There are potentially thousands of such tariff complaints to act on, but Obama had been halted in this activity by the right-wing court that ruled in a manner to tie his hands. With the election year underway, the Democrats in Congress were able to shame enough Republicans into voting through a bill freeing up Obama to act on tariffs, and he is. The Bush administration did not bring even one tariff action in 8 years, no matter how egregious were the Chinese trade practices. The resulting tariff on tires under Obama was 99%. Republicans did nothing. Jamie Dimon's gambling losses at J.P. Morgan Chase have gone past $3 billion U.S. dollars and counting. The Facebook IPO seems to have fizzled, with stock barely trading over the issue price. It was supposed to be a multi-billion dollar boondoggle for the fat cats, who were allowed to buy 90% of the new stock at the issue price. Only 10% of the stock was actually offered to the common peasant during the IPO, with the expectation that everybody would run out and buy when actual trading began and pay double the price. So far, people have been smarter than that. Conservatives are still screaming about the looming threat of inflation from government debt. The fact is that we still need to be worried about deflation. They always point to the Weimar Republic's runaway inflation after World War I as the historical precedent and how that allowed Hitler to come to power. The small problem with that version of history is that Germany's inflation came and went while Hitler was still practicing his speeches in a beer hall. It was the massive deflation of the early 30s that brought Hitler to power. The fact is that our government can borrow money for 10 years at 2%, and 10-year inflation-indexed bonds are selling at what amounts to a negative interest rate. They still scream that with all this debt, we are becoming like Greece. Well, the problem for Greece is that the International Monetary Fund and the bankers are forcing deflation onto the Greek public. Of course, they call it austerity. Austerity is what the Republicans want to force the middle class here to swallow. Then, well, we would be just like Greece. Prairie2.com. I think the Greeks, by the way, are on the verge of giving the middle finger or the Greek equivalent of that obscene gesture to the Euro bankers, the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, the Germans, the French, whoever else has set up this horror. And I think the Greeks, from what I've been reading, this is not my opinion, what do I know? But it appears that the Greeks are going to bail out of the Eurozone and go back to the drachma, or a currency that is not based on the euro. Now, I keep reading these articles about how that's going to hurt your 401k. I guess that's to whip up rage and anger against this little country of Greece that seems to hold the key to the future of civilization. I guess they did it one time, but dear God, that was, 3,000 years ago. But to watch, I've been reading the business section of New York Times, and of course, a couple of the columnists there are real skeptical, as is Paul Krugman, of all this hysteria about Greece. Like, Jesus, big damn deal. Let the Greeks be the Greeks. Remember that? Let Reagan be Reagan. Remember that? Let the Greeks be the Greeks. It's their country. And these international capitalists, these bloodletters, have apparently made a determination that the cradle of democracy is going to be the first one to feel the blade, in the Western world. I guess to do what? Teach the rest of us a lesson? We'll be right back.
Do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
I need this hopeless feeling like I need a hole in my head.
21 past the hour.
Give up my whole day's wages.
We are going to, at the bottom of this hour, after the next break, we'll do podcast trivia. So during the next break, we'll open up the phone lines, and you can jump in and join us for podcast trivia, and then stick around if you want to for comments. Bob in Palatine, Illinois, sent me something about this creepy bastard Joe Ricketts that we talked about last night, this billionaire right-wing neo-fascist. Mike, you might be interested to note that this is not Ricketts' first foray into national politics. In 2008, he formed a super PAC and gave Sharon Angle, remember her, $600 million to defeat Harry Reid. I think his problem with Democratic politics has to do with the new Consumer Finance Protection Agency, established by Dodd-Frank and organized by Elizabeth Warren. Most of TD Ameritrade's customers are consumers, and I'm sure he doesn't want any regulations whatsoever. As for the Chicago Cubs, he bought them as a rich play toy for his kids. Daddy Joe is the majority shareholder, but his 40-something son, Tom, is the president, and his daughter Laura is the first openly gay Major League Baseball executive. She serves on the board of directors and is allegedly an Obama supporter. How's that for a little more hypocrisy? Oh, my God. Finally, you might be interested to know that 1 month after Harry Reid won his reelection And Joe Ricketts blew his $600 million. His son Tom was all over the local news asking the state of Illinois to give him, not loan him, give him $150 million for the renovation and reconstruction of Wrigley Field. Today, many commentators are saying boycott the Cubs. But I say close your TD Ameritrade accounts immediately. And by the way, don't reinvest them with that right-wing scumbag Charles Schwab either. Yeah, well, you know, these big investment houses advertise on television all the time. I don't know. I don't get that game. I really don't. I have a couple of friends in Atlanta who have made a lot of money the hard way by working their asses off. And the husband said to me not too long ago, you know, I don't know what to do with this cash I have building up. And, of course, the first thing I said was, give it to me. And when he stopped laughing, he said, you know, I would no more put this into anything that even had a remote connection to the stock market or a 401ks or anything. And as far as these television advertising investment houses, it's a joke. And I think most people should understand that. It's just, I don't know. We are in the death throes of capitalism. We really, truly are. And the people who have brought us to this point are the very capitalists themselves and their greed. So I said to my friend, well, why don't you go buy some farmland out in North Georgia and hire some organic farmers? I don't know what he's done. I don't know if he's done that or not. But I think he's the only rich person I know. From Larry in Southern California. Mike, Arthur C. Clarke was once asked why life in the universe seems so hard to find. Arthur Clarke said that civilizations only lasted about 100 years after they had discovered how to make an atom bomb. So we've got maybe 40, 50 years if we're lucky. Larry in Southern California. By the way, I'm 74, so I'll doubtless croak before a nuke wipes us out. Not necessarily, Larry. Not necessarily. I didn't know Arthur. That makes sense. The White House monitoring. This is from Matt in East Jordan, Michigan. Matt writes, the White House monitoring of Occupation Wall Street through NORTHCOM, Northern Command, is the same reason the DNC and its head, Barack Obama, won't lift a finger to help Mayor Barrett in Wisconsin, you know, defeat Scott Walker. Deep down, the president and the DNC are as anti-worker, anti-union, pro-privatization as Scott Walker is. This is why, for example, Obama named a neoliberal pig like Arne Duncan to lead a war on our public schools. The administration quietly wants a union destroyer like Scott Walker to do the dirty work, so they don't have the guts to do openly. The same kabuki dance happened during the so-called healthcare debate. Quote, quote, the president didn't present his own bill and dragged the debate out as long as possible, not to challenge the Republicans or corporate power, but to allow the Republicans in the insurance industry to beat down any possibility of getting a bill that would actually lessen their power and help working people. The president's battle at that time was never with the pharmaceutical or insurance industries. His battle was always with the few remnants of the New Deal liberals still left in his party. Obama and the DNC repeatedly used the Republicans to do the dirty work of pushing a corporate militarist agenda that they support as strongly as the Republicans. All those suckers out there sending the DNC $20, all those fools pledging time to man phones for the Democratic Party, what a waste of resources. Matt in East Jordan, Michigan.
because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Yeah, he does. Really does. Twenty-five before the hour. Nobody wants to play podcast trivia, Kathy, so you want to wait and do it Monday? 877-996-2556 if you want to do that. This hour is sponsored by Ronald Canning, and I want to read you an email that he sent me a couple of days ago. I just sponsored hour two this coming Friday. The following is some background why. I'm listening today to your podcast from last night. There was a caller who mentioned Captain Paul Watson of Sea Shepherd. Captain Paul and his daughter lived for a month at my place when I lived in Key West. They were there while the Sea Shepherd ship was being prepared to return to sea. I spent many hours shuffling Paul and his crew around. Paul was one of the original founders of Greenpeace. They threw him out of Greenpeace after he interfered with a Canadian seal hunter who was about to club a baby seal. Paul grabbed the club away from the sealer and threw it into the water. This action violated some Greenpeace rules, so they forced him out of that organization. It was just after this that Paul formed Sea Shepherd. Paul's right-hand man was Benjamin White. Ben and Paul were both together at the Lakota Uprising at Pine Ridge back in the 70s. Ben White was an SDS member arrested in Chicago during that notorious 1968 police riot at the Democratic National Convention. Both men have been dedicated and disciplined leaders for passionate activism. It's always great to hear that Captain Paul is still making waves. Ben passed away a few years ago. On the lighter side, one magical day of fun off Key West, Paul, Ben, and a good part of the Sea Shepherd crew were out on my boat swimming with wild dolphins. We also know how to take a break and have some fun. You got to do that, too. Ben used to really struggle trying to understand why some people would kill whales or dolphins or seals or place them in captivity or basically do harm to the fabric of life of which we're all a part. Ben had a working theory that some people are born without a nature gene, that somehow lacking this gene, they felt no attachment to being part of nature themselves. And now we know it's not the genes. It's conditioned human behavior. I wish he were still around to talk about this and stir up the activism pot. This weekend, Chicago will again be the focal point of activism against the machine. When you place your body on the line during a protest rally, it creates a complex of anxious and nervous emotions, while having fear of the very real possibility that you will suffer physical harm or injury. Your spirit soars in the knowing that you're making a stand. So in honor of the brave Americans who would take to the streets in Chicago this weekend, in fond memory of Ben White, and to support Captain Paul Watson, I sponsor this hour of your program. Please ask your listeners to go to Sea Shepherd website to find out how they can help bring Paul home from the German prison. The powers that be have the possibility to see Paul legally extradited to Costa Rica. We live in dangerous and weird times where unbelievable things can and do happen. Don't give the bastards a chance. Please ask your listeners to go to the Sea Shepherd website. Get the addresses there of the German ministers. Write to them to free Paul Watson. Let them know the whole world is watching. Thanks. Ron. So there you have it. If you haven't been to seashepherd.org, might be a good thing to do. Now, Kathy, do any of these callers want to play podcast trivia? Nobody does? You're kidding me. What the hell? What are we going to do with this free podcast we want to give away? You know anybody? You want to call anybody up and just say, hey, Malloy's audience, what little bit he has, just decided they didn't want podcast trivia. Okay. You know what we could do? I've got this chat room going here, this live chat. I could just ask it on the air, and whoever gets it first in the chat room What do you think? You're the producer. You don't want to do that? Well, now you're going to piss them all off. Tough? Is that what you said? Tough? All right, we'll give it another minute. If you want to play podcast trivia, 877-996-2556. GK is in Rochester, Minnesota. Hello, GK.
Hi, Mike. How are you this evening?
Pretty good. How about you?
Good, thanks. Well, originally I wanted to call and talk to you about the Rush Limbaugh Babes for Freedom thing, whatever he has, Facebook page. But I think we've had enough Facebook for one day, don't you?
I think so, yeah. For one lifetime.
Exactly. Well, I got to thinking about this today after I talked with my right-wing neighbor, and he kind of infuriated me so that it's about the Arab Spring and the potential increase to the Occupy movement and the increase in the minority birth rate in the U.S. My census, and I always hate that word minority when it comes to people because it kind of dehumanizes them, you know?
Sure.
But, like the Arab countries, they have not gained a thing yet, but they have the numbers, you know, like you talk about maybe could happen here someday. A couple points, and I think the first one you agree with, you know, if the Republicans have not totally destroyed this country, and should the Occupy movement keep going and get stronger, you know, I think the movement could come to fruition. The next point, the Arab Spring didn't happen all of a sudden. It's a long time coming, and mm-hmm. the same thing could be said for what's going on here, the way things are going. Excuse me if it sounds like I'm reading, because I actually am. Because I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist, and I think too much sometimes. And then the next point is that, you know, because the white population is shrinking and the minority populations are getting larger, I think it could only add to the Occupy movement should it keep going. Even though that may sound a little far-fetched, you know, it could happen. And, you know, as far as like the oligarchs, the right-wingers, the corporate Democrats, the religious freaks, and all those military war complex higher-ups, they're so afraid of the movement and what it's become. They definitely want to get rid of it. And you talk about why don't Americans in general, get to the streets like the 300 million or whatever, 30 million people, 30 million people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in my lifetime that could actually happen, all these people standing and, wanting equality and fair rights for everyone, not just a few. And, Unlike the religious freaks out there, I think that they want to get ready for the judgment day. I think we'll be ready when it's time to regain this country with its totally different demographic makeup and have a run by its people instead of the few. Now, I mean, I was going to ask you to kind of jump in when does that make any sense at all?
it's hard to.
No,
what you're saying makes sense. It's hard to come up with nonsense in these times. No, what you're saying makes sense. the problem is finding something that will inspire millions of people to just stop. You know, we're not asking people to storm the walls of the Bastille. We're not asking people to, ride from Concord to Lexington or Lexington to Concord screaming, it's time to arms, to arms. All we're asking people to do, I don't know who this we is, all I'm suggesting, let me rephrase it, is what a lot of people have suggested where it concerns massive, nonviolent resistance to the machine, and that is just to stop, just to not do anything. Now, the problem here, of course, and I know a lot of people feel this way, is that, if they take a day off to go demonstrate, when they come back, there would be no job. But I don't know how to address that. I don't know what to say. That's a legitimate reason for people not to participate in something that may completely change the system. And now, it's not going to change in one day, like you pointed out. Even if 30 million people did take to the streets, it'd have to be 30 million people the next day, too, and probably the day after that. And then there would probably be the inclination on the part of the national security state to wade into people and start busting heads and putting people in jail. At that point, then I think this country, this country is going to explode in a way that Nobody like, can even, you can't even imagine what would happen.
I mean, like you talked about the Northern Alliance, you know, I mean, that may, hopefully it never happened, but I mean that, you know, if that kind of a percentage of people would go, I mean, and, you know, protest like peacefully, whatever, that, you know, they could call on that. But I mean, with the census thing that they came out, you know, like, so it's like a small percentage of babies under the age of one. Sure, it's like going to take 18 years before they could even remotely even get involved. But I mean, the parents of these minority children, they got to have a lot of pressures to be building, you know, would start building more on them, that maybe it would turn a few more minds or heads towards, you know, to this movement that, you know.
That's true. GK,
lacking, you know?
GK, I've got to leave it there. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
I appreciate what you had to say. I hope it doesn't come to a violent reaction, but there's no telling. We'll be right back. Podcast Trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Program Podcast. Downloads commercial-free in your device every morning. All you have to do to win this is to come up with the right answer to our trivia question. Dan is in San Diego. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
What made you decide to call in?
Well, you were begging.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, I've tried so many times, and after I dialed six times, I actually got through.
I'll be damned. Well, here you are. Okay, you ready to do this?
I hope so.
Okay, here we go. Mitt Romney. I'll wait for the music. There it is. Mitt Romney is now claiming character assassination, presumably the result of political ads run by the Democrats. Why is this claim impossible? A, Mitt Romney has no character. B, Mitt Romney is a character and the Democrats are not trying to assassinate him. C, Mitt Romney will say anything to pull attention away from his constant shape-shifting. D, Mitt Romney is the classic capitalist liar. Or E, all of the above.
I'm afraid that's got to be E, Mike.
I'm afraid you're right. All right. That wasn't hard, was it? No?
Not hard at all, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Hold on a second, and Kathy will get the information. And I appreciate you playing, Dan. Thank God somebody jumped out of the weeds and saved us from hideous embarrassment. What? Nobody listens to the program? Are we down to 32 listeners now, and all 32 of them already have podcast subscriptions? Is that how it works? I think that's it. And again, this hour is sponsored by Ronald Canning, whose message is in support and honor of the brave Americans who would take to the streets of Chicago this weekend. It's also in a fond memory of Ben White and to support Captain Paul Watson. So go to the website, cshepherd.org, and follow. There will be some information there, how you can petition German consulates in this country or the German government itself to release Captain Paul Watson. So do that if you would. And thank you very much, Ronald, for the email that you sent me and also the sponsorship. I appreciate it. Who's this from? Oh, well. Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy and the rest of the Chicago Police Department continue to refuse to publicly speak about a preemptive raid last night against activists. The raid took place at an apartment where activists were staying in Bridgeport on the south side of Chicago. It happened just days before the scheduled NATO summit that begins on Sunday. Five people are still being held in detention without charge. The 48-hour detention deadline is fast approaching. Well, I guess it would be passed by now or close to it. No, I guess not. Not yet. The National Lawyers Guild, in a press release, states, quote, the city has until tonight to either charge the arrestees or release them. The city has never explained its reasons for the raid, what they are charging the protesters with, nor provided any evidence of wrongdoing or criminal activity, end quote, National Lawyers Guild. In fact, according to Kevin Gostola, who wrote this for the, I think this is for Fire Dog Lake, McCarthy was confronted at a press conference, that's the chief of police, with questions. He responded, quote, we're not going to talk about it. We're just not going to talk about it. It's an ongoing investigation that has not been completed. We're not going to talk about it, end quote. Chief McCarthy added, quote, protest-related activity, we've had 12 arrests. Someone called him out for giving an arrest number that did not include those picked up in the raid. He refused to address the issue even after a member of the press noted some arrestees had been released. We're not going to talk about it. We're just not going to talk about it. Now, saying there's an ongoing investigation doesn't make it legal or acceptable to hold people incommunicado, people who are here in Chicago or they're in Chicago to exercise their First Amendment rights. If the police are going to facilitate unpermitted marches, as McCarthy said in the press conference, they should definitely be able to facilitate a search warrant. They should be able to facilitate the reading of rights to activists who are arrested. The National Lawyers Guild plan is to take legal action if the five people remain in detention past the 48-hour mark. If they do take action, it will certainly be justified. There have been consistent reports of what one could call fascism, as police are making, quote, routine visits, end quote, to homes and demanding people let them search because they suspect, quote, anarchist activities are taking place, end quote. So, preemptive arrests. See, this reminds me of what the Chicago police did to, and the Oakland police did to the Black Panthers when all of a sudden the white power structure got very, 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 very nervous about all those black folk walking around with weapons. What? What about the Second Amendment? That's not for black people. You didn't think it was for black people. The Second Amendment, that's only for white people. Oh. Okay. All right, well, we'll go put our carbines back and our shotguns, and we're sorry. Can we keep the black berets? How about the black leather jackets? I don't know. We'll get back to you on that. Okay. Hour 3 of the Malloy program coming up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. Malloy program. Oh, the phone number here is 877-996-2556. This is the weekend that various and sundry demonstrations are planned in Chicago. Hold on a second while we get rid of the music. There we go. Because of the meeting of the NATO forces, the NATO ministers, or whatever the hell they are in Chicago, National Nurses United, various unions, civil rights organizations, human rights organizations, people who are just sick and tired of this constant funding of a war machine to the tune of $1 trillion a year that we know about in this country, while the country goes to hell, where it concerns infrastructure and education. I mean, here in Georgia, of course, this is Georgia, so, you know, you can draw whatever conclusion you want, because this is, you know, part of the old Confederacy, and the old Confederacy doesn't believe in educating people to the truth or to facts. What they do believe in the South, for the most part, the educators, is keeping people as stupid as possible, provides lots of non-union workers for the global corporations that move into the South now. They have great celebrations here when China opens a plant, when France opens a plant, when Germany opens a plant, and the yokels here just, oh, they're just beside themselves, just bubbling over. Man, did you hear? We're going to get paid $12 an hour. Ah, damn! You know, that kind of stuff. As far as education, for the most part, the public education here in Georgia, county after county, is letting administrators go, teachers go, music teachers, gym teachers, foreign language teachers, art teachers. They're consolidating classrooms. Nobody gives a goddamn about education in this country anymore. You know that as well as I do. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. People can still go to Harvard and Yale and the various Ivies and some of the exclusive colleges and universities around the country. But, you know, the only requirement is if you have $60,000 a year to send your kid off to school. So the protest against NATO, not only is it valid and legitimate and real, I wish there was some other way of letting these warmonger bastards understand that we the people are sick of it. I mean, really, don't you think? I mean, how many nuclear warheads do we have? That many, huh? 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 12,000? I don't know. So who would invade us? I mean, you folks do understand, don't you, that the reason we are a national security state, the reason that we maintain such a huge military. Now, when I say military, I don't necessarily mean people in uniform. I mean the weapons industry, the power of destroying the earth 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 times over. You know, this is pure madness. And we're all participating in it. It's total insanity. It is pure madness to continue to do this. But continue it, we are going to, regardless. It doesn't make any difference if it's a Democrat or a Republican. Barack Obama, on this issue, is as bad as George W. Bush, who is as bad as Bill Clinton, who is as bad as Pappy Bush, who, you know, just work your way back. You know, I got an email from somebody earlier today who made a request. Mike, would you tell me who in your lifetime do you think was the best president? And I went through the list, starting with Truman, and I couldn't come up with any. I mean, Truman ordered the burning to death of 500,000 people in Japan. Eisenhower set the parameters for invasions in Southeast Asia. Kennedy, I don't know about Kennedy. I know that he probably wanted to get out of Vietnam, and that's why he was murdered by the capitalists. Johnson, Johnson sent how many people to Vietnam? 1 million Americans. Nixon was a megalomaniac, crazed son of a bitch who started invading countries at will, just whoever. Well, let's go there. Well, let's invade there. South America, Central America, Southeast Asia, didn't make any difference. Ford continued those policies in South and Central America. What did Carter do? Carter was part of the national security state, too. He kept it going. And then, of course, Reagan, who was instrumental in the murder of hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East and in Central America. And then who? Pappy Bush decided to invade Iraq. And then Clinton, who liked to talk about on his 8 years, not a single American soldier was killed in combat. No, there were other ways to murder people around the planet, though, right, Bill? And then, of course, Junior Bush, look what he did, and now Obama. So I couldn't answer the guy's question. I think they all suck. Every single one of them was a warmonger. Every single one. And not for reasons of defense. Ask Ron Paul. Not for reasons of defense at all. Why do we maintain this national security state? Why is NATO meeting in Chicago? Why do we spend $1 trillion a year that's visible on this madness? Because capitalism demands it. The capitalists understand something that you and I better get our heads around very quickly. Resources are finite. Capitalism demands a steady supply. It can't go on. It simply cannot go on. Eventually, enough holes are going to be punched in the earth. Enough minerals are going to be extracted. Enough air is going to be polluted. Enough fires are going to be started. Glaciers will melt. And eventually, pig bastards like Limbaugh will drown in their own body fat, which will be a glorious day. And maybe then Americans will wake up. Oh, my God, the sea levels have come up 15 feet. Oh, my God, I can't breathe. Oh, my God, where am I going to get this or that or the other? I mean, but in the meantime, the national security state just lumbers along. It just doesn't pay any attention whatsoever to these desperate, desperate times. And the reason it continues to lumber along is because the capitalists who own it now say, you keep the goddamn thing lumbering along, we'll make you president. You want to be president? You're president. You want to be a senator? You're senator. You want to represent your tacky little congressional district? Yeah, represent it. We'll provide you the money. We'll get you in there until we're tired of it, then we'll get somebody else. But keep your goddamn hands off the national security state. We're capitalists. We don't care if the rest of you people die and choke to death. We don't care. The only thing we care about is our own survival. I mean, what the hell does it take? Oh, stop it, Malloy. Stop it. You know, I read these impassioned pleas by Chris Hedges, who comes out with a new essay about every, week or 10 days. I've been reading Noam Chomsky forever. Chomsky is not impassioned. He's very just kind of, hey, listen, you know something? We're all going to die. You know, Chomsky is just kind of laid back. But Hedges, you know, he keeps trying and trying to wake people up. And we won't wake up. It's like we're in a goddamn coma. It's like we're brain dead, flatlined. We're being kept alive by machines. I don't get this. I just don't get it. We'll be right back. the hour. You know, as my good friend Pterodactyl said one time, war is a failure of leadership. And that should be the meme, not this rah, 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 USA bull hockey. You think? And she also pointed out that the hypocrisy of when Barack Obama accepted the Nobel Peace Prize with a speech that promoted the necessity of war. It's kind of like when Henry Kissinger and Lê Duc Tho got the Nobel Peace Prize. And, of course, the North Vietnamese Lê Duc Tho refused to accept it. Kissinger is dripping all over himself to get his hands on it. Reggie, I'm sorry. Mark, is that you?
That's me.
Hey, hold on a second, would you, Mark?
Sure.
Because I've got Reggie here who's been holding on forever. Hey, Reggie.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Just fine.
Good.
Well, I just wanted to know, has mainstream talk radio finally evolved or devolved? And the reason why I'm asking you this is because I've been listening to talk radio for over 20 years, and it used to be entertaining and fun. But now, 20 years later, you know, you get is the vitriol, the name calling, the insults, and, you know, all of that. Hate speech.
Uh-huh.
Or hate radio. And I'm talking about, you know, and it's coming from the right, I'm sure. You know, from people like Dana Loesch, for example.
Uh-huh.
You used to be able to disagree with somebody without being disagreeable. Now it's not so much that way anymore. And has it always been this way? And if not, when did it become this way?
Well, Reggie, I'm not quite sure how to answer. Talk radio was not this way until Rush Limbaugh came on the scene. Limbaugh is the person who utterly and absolutely changed the complexion of talk radio. You're right. At one time, when I first got in about 27 years ago, it was conversation about issues. It was issue-oriented. But we had very hard and fast rules about how you could talk about issues, and not the subject matter or not a point of view, but you know, you had to be very polite. You had to present both sides. You had to listen to people on the other side. When Limbaugh came on, all of a sudden, all that changed. Limbaugh very seldom took phone calls, and which nobody does anymore, not really. But he became the model. Not that all of us modeled ourselves after him, but he became the model that program directors began to demand. If you wanted to be in talk radio, you're going to do it this way. If you're not going to do it this way, you're out. A lot of them insisted on a right-wing point of view, and a few of us resisted. Well, those few of us who resisted never had the sterling careers of a piece of human waste like Sean Hannity, who is nothing but a butt boy for Rush, or is it vice versa? So talk radio was mongrelized, if that's the right word, by Limbaugh, and coming right on his heels, all of a sudden, there were scores, hundreds of these right-wing vermin who showed up all over the place. Because Limbaugh was so successful, the program directors of these various stations and networks said, well, if Limbaugh can do it, we can hire this little jerk like, pick a name. We'll put him on. We don't have to, we can have somebody here locally. We don't have to subscribe, or not subscribe, because Limbaugh used to give his program away. We don't have to have a syndicated program. We can have some little twit right here in name the city. Say the same garbage. Well, those of us on what was left of the left, some of us, Peter Werbe was one, I was one, just decided to fight back, only to fight back as viciously as these right-wing sons of bitches were filling the airways with lies. Well, we got marginalized. It's very simple. When corporate America doesn't want to hear something, and doesn't want America to hear it, they're going to make sure that it's not heard. It's very simple. So it's been a real struggle. The reason I get as verbally violent as I do and as verbally vicious as I do is because I feel cornered. I feel like these sons of bitches are trying to kill me. They're trying to kill my children. They're trying to kill my country. They're trying to kill my mind. They're trying to kill my soul, my spirit. They're trying to kill the goddamn planet. So, you know, to sit back and say, well, okay, let's have a nice discussion about, very politely, about whether or not the highway bill should pass. Now, I'm sorry. The only thing I hope, Reggie, is that the few people who may or may not listen to this program will hear resistance of a sort that is equal in intensity and vitriol and fire to these right-wing sons of bitches who continue to lie and try to destroy my country. It's not their country. It's my country. So, you know, that's the only answer I can give you. And I know that's not very sufficient. But thank you, Reg. Appreciate you checking in.
Another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, as promised, we're going to replay the latest edition of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Take another break from all this madness that we've been talking about tonight just to catch our breath. So sit back, relax, enjoy Bob Alexander's Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Two travelers blast beyond the barriers of space and time through a million would-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. Yes, radio listeners, it's time once again to join truth seekers from around the globe who anxiously await the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
You remember last time? Undead Nazi zombie Wernher von Braun trapped Mike and Kathy in a time machine controlled by an onboard HAL 9000 computer and sent them careening through time. HAL alerted Mike and Kathy that a mission-critical component of the Tesla Time-O-Matic was going to fail with disastrous consequences. Join us now for tonight's thrilling episode, Chapter 5, The Invisible Terror.
Just a moment. Just a moment.
Now what?
I've just picked up a fault in the AE-35 unit.
What's that?
It's going to go 100% failure.
So we're all going to die, right?
Well, yes.
And...
Is this like we're all going to die big picture sort of stuff, or is this thingy...
AE-35 unit.
Right. AE-35 unit's failure going to kill us?
Yes.
It's like trying to get a straight answer from a used car salesman.
So how much time do we have left?
It's going to go 100% failure within 72 hours.
So we've got 3 days before this doohickey...
AE-35 unit.
Who cares? We've got 3 days before it fails, right?
That's a completely reliable figure.
Okay, then. Hal!
Yes?
Is it possible for you to stop this thing?
Yes.
Well, then,
stop it!
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this before.
Who cares? Put on the brakes, pull the plug, throw out an anchor, but do whatever it is you have to do to stop this thing.
I know I've never completely freed myself of the suspicion that there are some extremely odd things about this mission.
And you're right at the top of the list.
Shut this thing down right now.
Mike, now what are we going to do?
Good question. Von Braun locked the hatch from the outside. Hal?
Yes?
Can you unlock the hatch?
Yes.
Wait. Hal, is it safe for us to go outside?
Quite honestly, I wouldn't worry myself about that.
Yeah, well, you're not going outside. Do you have any idea where we are?
Or when we are?
I'm sorry if I don't have enough information.
Big help.
Mike, where's the dog? Where's Asta?
He's around in here somewhere. Von Braun must still have him. Don't worry, we'll get him back. But we've got bigger worries right now, like what's on the other side of that door. Okay, as God is my witness, I never thought I'd say what I'm about to say. Open the pod bay door, Hal. You know, the older you get, the weirder things are. Let's go see what's outside, Dollface.
Ready when you are, CB. Well, wherever we are, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Kathy, take a look over there at what we've been riding in.
Weird. Looks like an old VW van.
Yeah, without wheels. Okay, we're in the middle of the valley, surrounded by some fairly high hills. The sun is almost directly overhead, so it's probably around noon. I have no idea which way is north. And even if I did, well, what difference would it make? We don't know where we are, and we don't have any food or water. Did I leave anything out?
Well, we might know what time it is, but what about what year it is?
You're right. We're completely screwed.
Mike, did you?
Yeah. Asta! Asta! Come here, boy! Asta!
Do you think it's really...
There's only one way to find out. Asta!
There he is!
And he's not alone.
You're here, you're here!
Asta, where did you find him?
What are you talking about?
The dog, little girl. Listen to me very carefully. Where did you find the dog?
Seriously? I didn't find him anywhere. You gave him to me this morning?
We gave him to you?
Is this some kind of game?
Yes. We just want to see if you can tell us exactly what happened this morning.
You know, of course, that sounds completely lame.
Do you have a better idea?
Oh, now I remember what you said.
What?
You said when I came out to see you this afternoon that you would pretend to act stupid.
And
I should play along. Boy, this sure is a dumb game. I was playing hopscotch after breakfast, and you both came out of your house with Asta. You told me you had to run some errands, and could I look after him?
Did we say what kind of errands?
Nope. You just said I should meet you here after I had my lunch.
And then what?
And then I'm supposed to take you to Mr. Moody's gas station. Come on, let's go.
But first, you have to tell us your name.
You know, my name's Molly.
Well, Molly, didn't your mommy and daddy tell you you shouldn't talk to strangers?
You're silly. You're not strangers. You moved into the house next door right after school started. Come on, we have to go. You told me this morning you had to be at Mr. Moody's before 3 o'clock.
One last question, sweetie. What year is it?
You told me you'd ask me that. It's 1959, of course.
Travelers to unknown regions would be well advised to take along the family dog. He could just save you from entering the wrong gate. At least it happened that way once, in a mountainous area of the Twilight Zone.
Mike and Kathy might have found their dog, but they have more questions than Molly can answer in 6 minutes. Will they ever find their way back to their own time? Here's a scene from our next exciting episode.
God is my witness. I'll never be hungry again.
For more heart-pounding excitement, be sure to tune in next time for The Return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
That's it? Oh, my God, I thought it was a new reel going to start. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by the inestimable talents of Bob Alexander. Thanks a lot, Bob. Performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. You know, that's what we ought to do. If we could just find sponsors to, I mean, just do that. I mean, seriously, Kathy, just do that. When I was a kid, it was right on the tail end of that kind of radio. And my parents used to listen to it. There was television around. We didn't have one. We didn't get a television until, like, I don't know, mid-50s. But the radio comedies and the radio, of course, it was soap operas, but I'm talking about the stuff at night, the primetime radio shows that we used to listen to. Most of them I didn't understand. I just knew my parents sat there and thought it was just great fun to listen to Jack Benny. All right, here, Mr. Benny. Rochester. I'm here, Mr. Benny, over here. George Burns and Gracie Allen. I mean, all that stuff. It was really fun. This is what, Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. On King, on you Huskies. maybe this is what we ought to do. You know, I'm thinking about, who is the young man that called from Decatur, who said, you know, when did all this, get so weird and nasty? Good question. Maybe we ought to just go back. Bob can do it. Bob can write the scripts. Bob can put together the production and just switch over, cut back from 3 hours a night to 1 hour a night, get a couple of big sponsors like Kraft Foods, Uncle Ben's Rice, something, Comet Cleanser. Just get a couple of sponsors like that and stop this madness and just do radio plays. Huh?
How old are you?
Way older than you think. All right, let's...
Uncle Ben's Rice?
Yeah, that's still around. That's still around. That's what we used to have when I was a kid. All right, we're going to take a break and come back. Michael in New York is on holding, and Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle with an update on Occupy. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Is in Seattle with an Occupy update. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
Are you on your way to Chicago?
I haven't left yet, but I plan on reporting on the events there for sure. There's some caravans that are leading from a lot of places around the country.
Yeah.
Heading that direction.
Well, and I hope to hear from you on Monday then.
Yes, I will definitely. Bring you an update, and I'm also proud to say that on Monday the Seattle Times is going to publish my op-ed piece about the Occupy Wall Street movement and it's about why the middle class is going to move towards and is already moving towards the Occupy movement in terms of support because of these austerity measures all around the country.
Right.
Talked about that once before, but yeah, they invited some of the Occupy Seattle folks to an editorial board meeting earlier this year. And that was one of the things that we requested, you know, is like, hey, thank you. And can we get something printed on the op-ed? Mm-hmm. So That's going to happen Monday. So
that's
good.
That's super. I can't wait to read that, Mark. Is it more than one of you that wrote? It's like a forum?
Well, that's how we originally planned to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But folks got so involved in the organizing efforts and stuff that we just all kind of like went our separate ways, and I decided to write my own. So,
right.
So, no, this is just my piece. It's basically...
When you're writing, it has to be anarchy. There's no such thing as collective writing.
It never happened. I kept waiting for that to happen. But
No, it's not going to happen. Collective theater, maybe, but not writing. No. That's a solitary enterprise. And if you try to do it as a group, you'll just wind up killing. Everybody pull out a gun and start shooting.
It's worse than being in a band. But
it is.
Tell you,
so it's much worse.
I really enjoy radio theater, Mike. And I love to write short stories, so we may have to talk about that at some point.
Yeah, that's great. I'll put you in touch with our writer-producer, Bob Alexander, in Vancouver, British Columbia. And I'm sure he used to live in Seattle, as a matter of fact. I'm sure you know that. Put you in touch, and maybe someday you can write a script.
Well, we have a tradition here through, the Cairo Radio Mystery Theater, which was really good. They did a lot of really good work.
Yeah.
And also, they've had live recordings here of their plays, so, you can go and do it live on stage on mic. So it's pretty great. I mean, it's really not a lost art. There's a lot of great people involved in producing them today. It's just that it doesn't get
the kind of publicity. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's fun to do. It's great fun to do. I know it's not necessarily great fun to write and then put the elements together, as Bob does, but it's fun for Kathy and me to be the actors. That's always a lot, a lot more. Oh, I don't know what, liberating than being the director or the producer, because then you have to be technically exact or as close to exact as you can. And, the kind of equipment that Bob Alexander uses and the kind of equipment that Kathy and I use to broadcast, it's amazing anything gets out. But we have fun doing it.
Well, there's a whole tradition behind it. And I think, one of my gigs as a, the commercial writer at one point was writing reviews for radio plays. So it was a great gig. I got to listen to really classic, really well-written radio theater and just, write reviews. And one of my favorites is still to this day the CBS Mystery Theater, written, produced by Hyman Brown. And he goes all the way back to The Creaking Door.
Right,
back in the 50s.
The Inner Sanctum. I remember the Creaking Door, The Inner Sanctum, all those spook stories that wound up on radio. I hate to use the cliche and say it was a golden age of radio, but it damn sure was.
Well, for some reason, the CBS people carried it into the late 70s and early 80s. It was sort of a revival, and they brought back a lot of the old veteran actors who were just super,
Yeah.
And they had some great hosts, and, it's classic. So I would urge everybody to go, check out the CBS Mystery Theater online. You can listen to all of their stuff on MP3 for free, so it's a lot of fun, and it's really well written. They have a few. Sam Dan is one of their writers, and he's crazy. I mean, he writes stuff that no one else would imagine unless you were some crazy sci-fi writer. But through the magic of radio, you can get away with amazing things.
It's true.
Without special CGI effects and amazing, multi-million dollar productions.
The theater of the mind, it's the biggest stage anybody ever have to work on.
It's very creative. It's pretty much unlimited. It's just up to the people's imagination. So as a writer, I always find that kind of thing is really freeing, Any of the stuff that you thought about, I would like to do a short film of this someday, how are we going to do this scene? Well, on radio, you can set it up in any way you want.
That's right.
Especially if you're a portfolio artist. And that's a major key to a lot of those really good programs. Sound guy just knew exactly how to evoke the right mood with the right sound.
I know this is not why you called in. I got you all diverted here, and we only have about 20 seconds left.
It's been a long day.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Mark, take care if you're going to Chicago. I think that there is the stage is set over there by the authorities for for some not really good times. I know it won't come from Occupy. It'll come from the other side. So just be careful, okay?
Hello, in Seattle, we're used to pepper spray.
I hear you. I hear you.
Long ways back. So
but I think Rahm Emanuel's the type to use truncheons, so just be careful.
Okay, Mike. Well, thanks for that, for the thought, the good the thoughts and the best wishes. And same to you and Molly and Kathy, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Take care, Mark. All right, Truth Seekers, we're out of here. We'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Good night, Kathy.
Hi, folks. Ronnie.